Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And as everyone is aware, I did not intend to have a COVID-19 update today, but a couple things popped up that I thought it would be good to have the information out to the public in a transparent way. First, let me put on the screen a picture of Forest City. So as you know, we have signed some extra testing resources. You've got a drive-in facility there in Forest City. So this was taken this morning. It's going on. Great response by the community that comes in, and we expect a good number to have been tested there. And so thank you, Forest City, for your cooperation, your leadership, and for taking advantage of this enhanced testing opportunity in your community. I'm joined today by Dr. Nate Smith, Secretary of the Department of Health. I also have Secretary Mike Preston that's here, Secretary of Commerce, and then Director Dexter Payne from our Department of Corrections. First, in regard to an issue involving our Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program and the progress update on this. And this is the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program that we're building a new system for. And Secretary Preston and his team has worked very hard on this. In fact, over the weekend, there's over 100 staff persons working through the weekend in preparation for this system and getting it ready and getting it all ready for our checks to be dispersed. But this system was being built by a team at the Department of Commerce, the Department of Finance, and they are all both utilizing the expertise and speed of an independent IT contractor, and the name of that company is Protech. And they're all part of the team that is working not just this weekend, but on previous weekends as well. Last night, I learned of a potential security incident in which an applicant seems to have illegally accessed the system. When this was discovered, it was necessary to shut the system down. These steps have been taken consistent with our state requirements for any potential data breach. And the sequence of events that we have to go through in our protocols is that law enforcement is notified of the breach. We obviously notify our cyber insurance carrier. Forensics are currently being conducted by an outside IT expert that we want to make sure that the system is in good shape before it goes back online. And then if we find during our investigation that any personal sensitive data is compromised, then steps will be taken, including the notification to the applicants or anyone that might have had their personal information compromised. And then secondly, if necessary, a credit monitoring program for those that might have been impacted. This is something we have some experience with. That's one of the reasons that we have a good cyber insurance program here in the state. In terms of the pandemic unemployment assistance payments, the team continues to work through the weekend, as I have indicated, to get the system back up, payments process, and trying to meet the goal of money out the door next week. And that leads me to the second part of the update today, and that is our case report. We can go on to the first slide on our cases, which yesterday we had 4,463 COVID-19 cases in Arkansas. In the last 24 hours, we have an additional 115 cases. Of those new cases of 115, we have 75 that are within the corrections department, and we have 40 that is in the community. And whenever you're looking at, I believe it's over 2,000 that we tested, once again, our positivity rate is low, we have 40 new cases across the state in addition to 75 which are in the Randall Williams Correctional Unit in Pine Bluff. And that gives us a total of 4,578 cases. Stop there for a second, and you can see the 7-day rolling average again. That fluctuates, that's on the orange line is the 7-day rolling average. And then the next one shows our I believe it's our hospitalizations. The current number of current hospitalized remains the same. Yesterday it was at 65 hospitalized. Today it remains the same at 65. In terms of deaths, there's no new deaths, 98 yesterday and 98 today. And in terms of the Randall Williams unit, I did ask Dexter Payne to come here today, who I got a briefing from him on the unit. And we have tested 515 inmates in the Randall Williams unit. Of those, 155 have shown negative, with 231 positive, and there's 129 pending. And so in the next couple days, we'll see some of those additional tests come in and be a part of the system as well. Two of those have been hospitalized as well. And so I know that the prison officials are taking extra steps to make sure those inmates are cared for, that we keep the positive and negative separated, and Dexter might have some more to say about that. And so with that, let me turn it over to Dr. Smith for his comments.
Thank you, Governor. In addition to the, I'll just give some additional details to the numbers that the governor provided. As the governor mentioned, we've had 115 new cases since yesterday. 75 of those are correctional and 40 community. Now, the governor's already reported more than 75 from the Randall Williams unit in Pine Bluff. Not all those are entered into our system. What we try and do is give you the most up-to-date numbers that we have, even if all those numbers have not made it into our data system yet. So our total is 4,578 cases. Total of those, 1,008 are active. Of those active cases, 370 are correctional, 101 are in nursing homes, and 537 are in the community. As the governor's mentioned, we've had the same number of hospitalizations, 65 as yesterday. We have 10 currently on a ventilator, which is a net increase of one from yesterday, and we have no new deaths, so we're still at 98. The number recovered is 3,472. That's an increase of 82 from yesterday. The governor has mentioned the new cases at the Randall Williams. We're at a total of 231 there. That's an increase of 177 from yesterday. We also have 8 staff, no new staff from yesterday. I'd also like to give a brief update on the testing that's been going on in the Federal Correctional Institute, FCI, in Forest City. The CDC and together with the Department, with the Bureau of Corrections, have been testing inmates there. That will be concluded today. But so far we have a total of 473 who have tested positive in the FCI, and that's an increase of 138 from what I reported yesterday. We will continue to get positive results back from today. It'll take a while for those to get into our system because those are being tested at various places, but eventually they'll show up in our numbers as well. I want to briefly touch on two other things. When we talk about our lab testing, I give a percent positive. For example, yesterday we had 2,138 test results, and of those 4.4% were positive. What we do is we take all the positives that came in yesterday, that's a midnight to midnight period of time. So we had a total of 2,044 that were negative and 94 that were positive. And that's how we calculate that. I know some of the journalists have tortured themselves trying to do the math from the numbers that I report. What I give at this briefing, for example, the 115, that's as of 10 o'clock this morning. I want to give you the most up-to-date numbers, but you're not going to be able to use that to calculate the percent positive because they're different time frames. And lastly, I wanted to touch on the ways that we are preventing the spread of COVID-19 broadly. We have individual precautions that we each need to continue taking. These include things like maintaining that at least a six foot physical distance from other people, hand washing, and wearing a face covering or mask, especially when it's difficult to maintain that 6 feet of physical distancing. We also have public health disease intervention steps like testing, case investigations, contact tracing. And then the third are these directives that we've put out that limit things like restaurants and other businesses. As we move forward, and it looks like we're gonna be dealing with COVID-19 for some time, and as we relax some of these directives, we're gonna be moving away from these mandates as a way of preventing the spread of COVID-19. We're scaling up the public health interventions like the testing and the contact tracing, but more and more of that responsibility is gonna be on our individual behaviors, are the individual interventions that we take. So it's even more important now than it has been before for us to take those steps individually, the physical distancing, the face coverings, the hand washing, and other things to protect ourselves and our loved ones. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. And now, Director Payne, if you could come and give an update on how we're taking care of the inmates in the Randall Williams unit.
Sir, Governor, thank you. Always thank you for your guidance and your leadership, and same with you, Dr. Smith. The Randall Williams unit, as the governor said, has tested 515 inmates. 231 of those are positive, 155 negatives, and 129 are pending results. This facility has been placed on lockdown, and we're moving the positive inmates in the barracks with the positive inmates and the negative inmates in the barracks with the negative inmates to keep from cross-contaminating the inmate population. Randall Williams is in a better position to deal with this issue because we have two other facilities right next door, and they could assist with the feeding and any other needs that we need at the Randall Williams facility. On a good note, we're following the guidelines as always from the Arkansas Department of Health and CDC to make sure we're doing the things we're supposed to treat our inmate population. At the Cummins unit, I wanted to give you an update. The Cummins unit, we had 872 positives during the time we tested every inmate there. As of yesterday, 860 of those were considered to have been recovered. So at the Cummins unit, our feeding of our inmates is getting better because now we could actually put the negative inmates in the chow hall with other negative inmates, so we're no longer feeding those inmates in the barracks like we were before. Thank you, Governor. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Dexter. And that's a good report. Appreciate the care because the inmates are Kansans. We care about them. We want to make sure they have the care that they need. I also just want to say that there's a lot of decisions that have to be made during the course of this pandemic. There are many times tough decisions, and we realize that they impact people's lives very personally. And we recognize that there are people that are hurting out there, that they've lost income. We want them to get back to work. We want to make sure that they get the compensation that they're entitled to. And we're working very hard to get that done, but we realize every decision that's made, every action that's taken does impact somebody's lives, and we put that foremost, and we're anxious for everybody to be working and having the income that they want to have and to be able to return to normal in a safe way. With that, we'll be happy to take any questions. Yes.
What's your recommendation to applicants to the PUA program? When will the forensic analysis be completed? And in the meantime, what do you tell the applicants whose sensitive information may have been compromised?
Well, first of all, in terms of the forensics of it, we hope that will be done today. We have an outside contractor that will come in that's independent that will review that and give us confirmation that we can bring the system back online. Secondly, as we continue the investigation, we'll know to the extent, if any, that individual information has been compromised. And in terms of the applicants, they will be notified once those determinations have been made. It's also very important that we continue the processing of the applicants so we can get the money out the door. And so our team partners, our Department of Commerce, Department of Finance, is looking at ways that they can continue to process those payments even though the system is down and the applicants can't access it. There won't be any need to access it until they actually have to file a claim. We're looking at ways to continue to get that money out the door. And then secondly, if there's the only other ones impacted would be that in addition to the 30,000 or so that we already have in the system, if there's new ones that want to or need to apply, that can't happen until we get the system back up. But those are the steps that we're taking. What I tell the applicants is, we've got over 100 people that are working this weekend to, as they have in other weekends, to get this system right, both to protect their data, but also to process these payments for money that they very much need. Yes, ma'am.
Based on the map that you showed us on Thursday, Based on the map that you showed us on Thursday, Arkansas was one of the 13 states who still hadn't paid people for PUA. Do you have an explanation on why other states have succeeded and we haven't? Is it just this breach, or?
I don't think we showed that map the other day, so I'm not sure what map we're talking about. And I've done some studies, and it doesn't sound right. I don't know of what all the states have done. I know that it's my understanding that some states have received applicants, but money is not out the door yet. So there's a lot of different ways to measure that. So I haven't done a thorough study of all the states as to where they are in this. I know that there'll be opportunity to compare our progress and how we're doing with other states, but in the meantime, we're trying to make the best judgments we can to work as hard as we can to get that money out the door. Yes, sir.
You had mentioned cyber insurance. How much money does the state, or could you see the state losing? And then what claim is the state making with this insurance carrier?
Well, first of all, this is cyber insurance is not something we had as a state when I became governor. And I have some background in cyber threats. And I know that's a risk, and I've got an insurance department that has moved us in the right direction, and we're able over time to get this cyber insurance. So it's not related to this specific incident, but we have it covering all of state government in terms of any loss of data or cost that might be incurred in doing the notifications. So that's in place. So we pay a fixed amount every year on the cyber insurance, so that is not any extra cost. In terms of the overall cost that might be incurred, and it's too early to know right now, but the major cost is the notification, and then secondly, the credit monitoring program that should be put into place for anybody who has their data compromised. And so that's just a protective measure, and that's one of the things that our cyber insurance would help cover. Yes.
I wanted to switch over to that rainy day fund. There were a couple of senators who said they refused to sign off on the money that was earmarked for Henderson, Arkansas State. Did you have any thoughts on that, and do you know where that money is going to wind up going?
I haven't talked to the two senators that objected to that budget support for Henderson State University, so I don't really know what their thinking is. I hope we can have some conversations about that. I do support assistance for Henderson State University. I realize they've made mistakes in the past, but we don't want to penalize the future for mistakes that might have been made in the past. We want to correct things. We want to have them on a good foundation for the students' future and the future of that school that I believe is important for our state. And so at the present time, I think there'll be continued discussions as to whether that is represented to the committee and we'll see how that develops, but I'm fully supportive of that. Yes.
You mentioned that some of the work on the PUA side had been contracted out to ProTech. Why was it contracted out? How much was the contract for? Was there a bidding process? And was any of the work subcontracted?
And I'm going to ask Mike, if I say it wrong, you can jump in here, but ProTech was a contractor that our DFNA had experience with, and so they had already been utilized by state government, so it went very fast in assigning the responsibility to them. Secondly, you ask why we utilized a contractor, because the speed that a private contractor can bring to build the system that is necessary, that's not something the state is good at, has a capacity for, and so we need to utilize that expertise and the speed that they can bring to build that kind of new system. I want to go ahead, Mike, if you just, I got that, but if you have anything else to add there.
Thank you, Governor. I think you covered that, and obviously our team has been spread as thin as possible trying to cover our existing unemployment insurance program and system and trying to handle the additional claims that we're seeing through that. When the federal government passed the CARES Act and said we have to build this brand new system to account for a certain classification that's never been covered before, it was almost imperative that we had to bring in some additional outside help, because we just didn't have the capacity, as the governor said, within state government to do it. So partnering with DFNA, who had some knowledge there, with our team at DWS, we were able to use that third-party vendor through the Department of Finance and Administration to bring them on to help us get it done in a much quicker manner than we would have ever been able to do so. I'd have to get back to you on that one.
ProTech's fault that this vulnerability exists?
You know, it's too early to say whose fault it was. Obviously, they are doing the forensics on it, and as they are building the system as we go, we're trying to do it in a very, you know, fast manner to get payments out, and we're testing it along the way. This is one of the things that obviously came up and was tested from the outside, and we realized that it needs to be corrected. So we'll continue to monitor that and do the forensic investigation.
In a prior briefing, that one of the issues with getting this launched was you had to have the PUA system talk to the existing unemployment system. Is there any concern that normal unemployment is affected by this potential breach?
No, that's not an issue at this point. It's an eventual talking to the systems. Right now, they're not. They're separate.
Yes.
Governor, how do we know that as far as that cyber hack was an applicant and not an act of terror? That's the first question. The second question is how many applicants applied for the actual program here in the state?
Well, in terms of the information we have, is that our forensics to date indicate that it was an applicant who also breached the system that accessed the additional information. In terms of the total number of applicants, it's 30,000, that over 30,000 have been approved. Mike might be able to give you later after this any more specific information on that. And let me emphasize back to the questions asked before, you know, ProTech does some initial forensics on it, but we're going to, before we restart the system, we have another independent group that's going to come in and be able to give confidence in what the system is and its integrity before we relaunch it.
Yes. With the state, or is that also a separate outside group?
That would be connected with our cyber insurance notification that they would bring in someone. Yes, ma'am.
Governor, do you have a specific message for the thousands of Arkansans who have been struggling over the last 2 months, who needed this money and are living paycheck to paycheck? Anything you want to say to them?
You know, our heart aches that the COVID-19 came about, that caused action to be taken, that impacted their business and their livelihood. Even though we had to make some of those decisions, we recognized the cost of it to their individual lives. And that's why we want to get not just the businesses back open again, but for people to have confidence that it's safe in that environment, whether it's a restaurant. We don't want them at one-third capacity. We want them at larger capacity. But for people to go back and shop and enjoy life as normal. They have to feel comfortable in the safety measures and are that they're going to be protected when they go into those businesses, because we want those people to have that full employment. And I think that we've taken steps to reduce the unemployment, even though we've got hundreds of thousands that are out there that are seeking assistance and need it and are entitled to it. We also probably have over 100,000 that are working that, because of the decision we made, they didn't lose their employment because we didn't do a shelter in place at the time. And then, you know, in terms of now and the weight that they're going through, that's why we have over 100 people that are working through this weekend. And they just need to understand that we understand the hardship on them, but at the same time, how that we're fully dedicated to getting that money out to them. Is there any questions remotely?
Yeah, this is Richard Tiffany with KPSQ. First of all, I'd like to say that I appreciate you being prompt about testing all the inmates at Randall Williams. And I have a question for Dr. Smith, kind of a follow-up from Thursday, that I recognize that serology tests are not good for telling who's active carrier that could spread the disease, but doing serology tests in Cummins would be useful in on a population basis, knowing whether the isolation there's been a success, that if 90% of the previous negatives that showed that they had been exposed and had pass through it, that you would know that the separation really was a failure, where if you only had 10% positive results from a serology test, that you would say that yeah, your separation policies would have been successful, and also that a 90% positive would give the inmates some confidence that there wouldn't be a second wave going through the prison at some future time.
Thank you. I think that's a good point about serologic testing or antibody testing. It can provide useful information, especially in a situation where maybe someone was infected but didn't get tested at that time. I think that potentially in correctional institutions, serologic testing will be a useful tool. Because of the approach that we've taken both of the Cummins unit and the Randall Williams unit and others, where we've gone in and tested pretty much everyone within a short period of time, segregated them and done follow-up testing if there are any additional symptomatic patients, then the antibody testing is probably less useful in that situation than, for example, at the FCI, where they testing process has really been stretched out over a month or more than a month, and there are some who test negative but actually were infected previously. In terms of serologic testing as a tool, antibody testing, there are some complications to that. First of all, it's a blood test, and so it's a little harder in that correctional setting to do large numbers of people in a short period of time. And second, we really have been trying to scale up our PCR testing for active cases, and that's been a priority. We don't want to distract from that at this point by using laboratory resources for a test that will give us useful information but not actionable information at this point in time. We will get there with the antibody testing, but it's not our top priority right now.
Let's take another question remotely.
Governor Hutchinson, this is Janie Weiss with 4029 News. My question is for Director Payne. You mentioned that the Randall Williams facility is better equipped to deal with an outbreak because of their close proximity to other facilities. Which facilities are those? And then is there a concern that coronavirus could be spread to other prisons because of that?
The facilities that are in close proximity are the Pine Bluff unit and also the Barbara Esther unit right there in Pine Bluff. I don't have much concern on spreading it to those facilities because we don't allow the staff to go inside of Randall Williams. If they deliver something, they'll deliver it to the back door and we'll get it there and bring it in. But the staff will not be crossing over into that facility.
Good. Well, right here, you had a question and we'll come to the table also.
Yes, I think this is more for Dr. Nate Smith. Our sister station asked about the latest count of cases for Sebastian County. On a state level, we were told 15 cases, but local officials are telling them 24. Do you have an official number for that county?
Sometimes there is a difference between what a county is reporting and what we report. Some of that is because we report this by county of residence, and so someone may have been tested within that county, but actually the residence that's documented is outside the county. And then another important reason is that we don't always get the county of residence on the information that comes with the test result. And so at any one time, we have a number of those test results that are missing county information. So when you look at our map, it doesn't all add up to the total because we have those that have missing information. Now, sometimes we're able to go back and get that information later from other sources. We've got some ways of linking names with addresses that we use, but it takes a little bit of time on that. And so I know it's particularly frustrating for the smaller counties when they know exactly how many are in their county and it's not showing up that way on our map. But we're working to try and get those as close together as possible.
Let's take one more question here, two more at the table, and then we'll go remotely, and that'll probably be about it. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. This might have been addressed days ago, but I guess it's a question that bears repeating. Is this unique to Arkansas, where we've had relatively modest numbers across the community in terms of COVID-19, but it has been sky high among the prison population? Have we seen that phenomenon elsewhere, and can you explain it, how it happened?
Yes, you've seen it elsewhere. I had a call from Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee, who he said, we're having an outbreak in our prison. How do you handle it? And, of course, that's what governors do, is have those kind of exchanges. And then you look at Illinois, an outbreak in their prison. And so it's not uncommon at all. I think, actually, we've handled it very well. The good news that you heard today was about 90% of the inmates at Cummins have recovered. And so we separated them, we dealt with it, they've recovered from it, and we're restoring that to a more normal operation there. Now we have one at the Randall Williams unit. You have other units that we actually had one or two positive cases and it didn't lead to an outbreak in our community corrections area. So, you know, they vary, but clearly this is very similar to nursing homes. Every state has had a challenge in nursing homes, and every state has had a challenge in the prison environment because of the closeness. See, we had one question here, then we'll go remotely if there's a final question.
Secretary Preston has said that no businesses got early word on the Ready for Business grant, but public records suggest otherwise. Can you comment?
I think that has just been beaten to death by a number of different hearings in the legislature. But Mike, do you have a word on that?
Absolutely. And we've turned over all emails on that. And I think if you look at the emails and everything that we've said, that there was information about a economic development partner call that happened. That information went out. That was addressed that day in the press conference. So all those folks were made aware, and that was made public at that time. There was no advance notice given, and I know if you read through all the emails and the Freedom of Information Act and everything that was provided by the Economic Development Commission, that supports that.
Then, is there any other question remotely? With that, thank you all for coming in on short notice on a Saturday. I hope this is helpful just to get some of those questions answered. Y'all have a pleasant Saturday and a good weekend.